This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing connection to lands, waters and culture. Colonisation and genocide, ongoing processes that continue to this day. Sovereignty was never ceded, and this always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Auspol Snack Pod, the podcast where we bring you bite-sized chunks of Australian news and politics with a side of crispy memes. We are also the official podcast of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group. If you like memes, shitposting, and Auspol, you should come and join the group. Answer the questions, or you won't get in. I am Zach Lesnack. I'm a mod in the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, and with me, as always, is friend, confidant, and member of my inner sanctum.
Me. It's me. Hey, everyone. Hey, Zach. I'm Noon on Facebook. I'm Andrew Funkenstein. And actually, just before we keep going, I just wanted to let the listeners know, and Zach, apparently you didn't catch this memo, but there's actually been a little change to the podcast. From now on, we're going to be Oz Corona, Corona Pod, the podcast that gives you Corona. So listeners, you have Corona now. Thank you for tuning in.
even though it's my turn to do the intro this week, Noon thought that he would jump in with his own bit. So I hope that everybody enjoyed Noon's bit.
Zach, do you have a bit
Since it was my turn to do the intro, I had also prepared a little bit.
All right, go on.
And do you want to hear that bit?
Yeah, I do. Right. I'm sorry to step on your bit toes.
So it goes like this. It's like, hey, Noon, have you heard about this new craze that's been sweeping the nation?
No, what is it?
It's telling your friends how much you love and appreciate them. And I just wanted to let you know that I love and appreciate you.
Oh, that's a pretty good bit.
Did you like that bit?
Yeah. It's okay. Listeners, tell us, what do you reckon? Do you like the wholesome stuff or do you like now having Corona? Which do you prefer?
Tough decisions.
Yeah.
Jumping right in with the hard questions at the top of the show here. One other thing we wanted to mention up the top here is to thank and welcome our new Patreon supporter, Jam. Thank you very much for signing up. We really appreciate it. It means so much to us. If you love the show and want to support us financially, you can do that over on Patreon for as little as $1 a month and get yourself a monthly bonus episode as well as other cool stuff.
And we also wanted to give a shout out to Mostly Ness for organizing a movie night on Auspol Shitposting. There was a watch party that happened on Friday this week, and it looks like that might end up happening again more often. So that's really cool. Thanks, Ness, for organizing that. And I think also Catherine, and I hope everyone who tuned in had a good time. I wasn't there, but maybe I will be for the next one. So that's just a nice little bit of community stuff going on. Love a bit of community.
Noon's marking it a little time because I'm fucking with something with the audio. I was quiet last week. Sorry about that, everybody. And thank you to Mac for pointing that out. I swear that I will try to do a better job this week. All right, cool. Let's get into our entree, Noon. This is an issue that is kind of close to your heart.
Yeah, I am personally very offended and upset about this. I know that sounds like a joke, but no, I'm quite personally upset and offended.
I mean, we tend to be upset and offended by most of the things that we talk about on the show.
It's normally a little more indirect.
Yeah, but you are personally, you've got a personal stake in this one.
Yeah, so the Victorian government has announced that they are ending the moratorium on onshore gas mining, which has been in place for about 5 years. There was a ban on all onshore gas mining, which included conventional and unconventional. Unconventional gas mining, listeners have probably heard a bit more about. That's fracking or coal seam gas mining or shale gas. It's all the same thing. It's called unconventional gas mining. And that is going to remain banned, which is good. But the government is opening up exploration and extraction for conventional gas mining, which is really fucking bad. It's a terrible idea. It's a really expensive and destructive form of energy production. There's a lot of talk about gas as like a
transitional fuel. The government is absolutely obsessed with like, oh no, but we know that fossil fuels are bad, but let's just switch to something else that like the mining industry can still make money off.
Also a fossil fuel that is just like slightly different. Yeah.
And as we've discussed previously on the show, is like there exists basically no export market for it.
That's like, right. Yeah. It's super
coming
uneconomical.
From us, it's super expensive.
Yeah. It's a terrible idea. It's also, there was a good tweet that we have. Do you want to read that out for a sec?
Yeah, sure. So this is from Twitter Max, you think? who I highly recommend following for good Ozpol takes. And he sums this up really well, because this is like classic Dan Andrews shit to me, right? That he's like announcing it in the midst of a crisis, for one thing.
Yep.
And also that this like piece of shitty news is tied up with two other things that are kind of like window dressing, environmental window dressing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, no, we're making the moratorium on fracking and coal seam gas mining permanent, so we're not changing anything there. But we look good, right? Oh, and also, by the way, we're allowing like regular gas mining to continue.
Yeah.
Or start up again. So, yeah. Anyway, fuck Dandrews. And this is a tweet that sums up why. Dan Andrews is a reminder that a politician who is competent, hardworking, and capable of leading a team of talented staffers finds it a lot easier to sell off the entire state to private interests. Followed up by, you can manage the outrage by feeding off a handful of big-sounding but functionally pointless environmental announcements. Then when everyone's busy being road warriors trying to stock up on baby wipes, just whisper, selling all aged care facilities to Crown, and move on.
Yeah, it's pretty true. And, like, I think the... this is a reference also to the, like, we're going to end logging of native forests in Victoria just after we've finished cutting down all of the trees, which we have discussed in previous episodes. But yeah, the reason this is particularly personal for me is that I worked on the Lock the Gate campaign in Victoria, which was an anti-gas mining campaign, and the moratorium was a huge win for us, and it's now been like walked back significantly. So that's super cooked. But so yeah, that's why I'm sort of personally particularly upset about it, quite aside from like it's the end of the world and we're making it worse or whatever, you know.
Yeah. No, it's particularly upsetting because that is an example of a really effective grassroots campaign that was connecting both urban and rural activists and was really about community organizing and, you know, getting farmers to basically say, no, fuck you. Like, you can't come on my land and do environmentally destructive mining.
It was
so to have this, you know, most progressive government in Australia diminish that work is, I think, it's pretty deflating.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, you're right. It was really, like, effective and significant, like the method of campaigning was also an impact in and of itself, and like a lot of it was run out from Melbourne, but we would go out to country towns and like talk to people. And I remember the first couple of times I met people, they'd be like, oh, greenies, what would you know about it? And then like two meetings later, ladies would come up to me while we were making tea after the meeting, like, you know, old women, and be like, I just think we don't have any other option than taking down the government. Just like, yeah, it was really beautiful. And it, as you said, really good at connecting rural and city people to connect over an issue that might otherwise be a point of conflict. So yeah, it's really sad to see this happen. And I think, you know, this tweet sort of pointed it out that it's happening in the middle of a crisis. And no doubt, I think 90% of that is because it like flies under the radar while everyone's fucking busy. But also this is a time when it's like literally impossible to organize mass demonstrations because it's like irresponsible. And so it's a time when reactionary policies can get slipped through in a way that basically people power is going to be finding it hard to organize against.
Absolutely. It is disaster capitalism defined, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, you use a crisis to push through rafts of reforms that, instead of making things better for people, make it easier for capital.
Yeah. Also, sorry, I'm nearly done with the story, but like the bushfires, it would have been fucking impossible to make this announcement during the bushfires because gas mining, probably even more than coal mining, lets flammable material out into the open in like unconstrained ways. And just the idea of there being like fucking gas wells in Mallacoota or wherever that the fires went through is just insane to think about opening that up when we've only just out of that bushfire season. Anyway, it's look, insane shocking, and unethical and awful.
Absolutely dog shit stuff from the Andrews government. Surprising at least neither of us and probably very few other people as well.
Yeah.
Is that enough on that?
Yeah.
All right. Now you're going to run us through our First Nation story, Noon.
Yeah, so this is about how great Daniel Andrews is. It's a little bit of a change in tone there. No, I mean, still fuck that guy. But Victoria is implementing the Stolen Generations Redress Scheme for a total of $10 million, or at least that's the initial amount. There's not a huge amount of meat on the bone of this announcement yet. This is something that we have kind of talked about in previous episodes, that it's been in the works. This is a process for helping make amends and reparations in whatever way possible for people who were stolen as children, or who were affected by that in various ways, often people who weren't stolen, but their children, or, you know, that sort of thing. I believe that there are about 1,200 people in Victoria who that this scheme will apply to. And the announcement was just that funding has gone through for it, but they're also about to start up consultation. So this will be with land councils and individuals and organizations and that kind of thing. And it's going to be figuring out basically what to do with this $10 million, how to apply it, how to send it to people. Are there going to be cash sums given? There's also going to be money available for counseling and other stuff. So obviously there's like literally nothing that can make amends for the stolen generation, but I also think it's really good that government's doing whatever they can, like whatever is possible from within the framework of like a colonial government and from the framework of like economic amends for non-economic damages. So yeah, it's good news.
This just is happening. Because you can't fix something 100% doesn't mean that you shouldn't try.
Totally.
And obviously this is still going to be very meaningful for a number of people.
Yeah.
Which is important to acknowledge whilst also acknowledging that it's
inadequate.
Massively inadequate at the same time. So, you know, props where they are due.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. All right, cool. So we're going to start kind of our mains now, I guess. It's all Corona everything these days. So Noon thought that we would make a new little sting because we have to talk about Corona so much. And here's that sting. Hey, man, I got some more beers.
Oh, I don't know if I can drink anymore. I'm feeling kind of sick.
No, come on. We're having another round of Coronas.
Hopefully that came across.
Yeah, I'll add some like beer clinking.
Yeah, cool.
Maybe a little bit of bar ambience. I could probably just steal the
pot, like, same one, yeah.
Also, please note that in real life, if Noon told me that he didn't want to drink any more beer, I would be like, that's totally fine. I'm not going to make you drink any more beer.
Yeah, so, which I appreciate. Exactly.
We're definitely, you know.
It's the fantasy of podcasts.
Yeah, the magic of audio. All I'm saying is respect your friends if they don't want to drink. Moving on. Corona stuff. So all the other segments will kind of fall into this. Just wanted to give a brief update of kind of like where things are at with the outbreak in Australia. So we're almost at 1,000 cases total in Australia at the moment, which is about 36 per million people, which puts us relatively low down the list of affected countries. Compared to, say, Italy, where it's really bad. They have about 750 cases per million. The other thing that the government announced this week was that indoor gatherings could be no larger than 100 people and that there should be at least 4 square meters of space.
Per person. For any indoor event, yep.
So that includes the restriction on any outdoor gatherings of over 500 people as well. Yeah, and there was also that thing about the cruise ship that had 3 confirmed cases that basically didn't get screened at all. They just like let all these people off, and now they're like desperately trying to find those people again, being like, ooh, that's a really high rate of infection. Yeah, so the government is not doing a great job. We're still not testing people en masse, and there's been a lot of calls to close schools. Has been one of the main things kind of on the agenda.
Before we get to that, I just wanted to say, I think, you know, you said that we've got just under 1,000 cases confirmed at the moment. It seems like the actual number is likely much higher than that, because as you say, there has not been testing going on of any kind of rigorous sort. And partly that's because testing is difficult and expensive and that there's not enough kits and so on, but partly it's the government has had a head in sand approach and has just like not implemented testing.
Yeah, and that like roughly 1,000 cases, if you look at it on a graph for over the last month, represents like a massive upward swing. So we're like in the midst of the spike, basically, and it's like the watching the numbers get like exponentially higher. Like there were only about, I think they were recording roughly like 150 cases per day at the moment, compared to like 25 a day about a week ago. So yeah, it's wild how quickly it spreads. So on the topic of schools, we received a potluck this week. Well, actually, we received a whole bunch of potlucks.
Yeah, we did.
It's really nice that more and more people are sending in clips of themselves talking about political issues to the show. We really appreciate it and we enjoy listening to all of them. But we don't have time every week to play everyone. So apologies if you sent one in this week and it didn't get played.
Keep sending them in.
Please keep sending them in. This one is from an anonymous teacher.
Potluck, where you bring the snacks.
I have a coronavirus-related rant for the potluck, and it's about schools not being closed. I am a teacher, and like many teachers, we are, you know, really frustrated at the contradictions between health advice and the reality of the classroom. I have preps, and I don't know if you've ever met children, but they are gross. Like, I love them to bits, but they chew on their pencils, they wipe their noses with their hands, they touch everything, they're openly affectionate and are really honestly clueless about personal space. Like, most of the time they can't even walk through a doorway without hitting each other and then, you know, having to dob on each other for hitting each other. But yeah, they're definitely not keeping a 1.5 meter distance. And we do our best. We've been teaching them about hand washing and, you know, trying to make it a game, like put a stamp on their hand and then they need to wash it off by the end of the day. And you know, we wipe tables, but we're also aware that we don't want to create anxiety in them because they are very small and shouldn't be traumatized by something like this at a young age. Yeah, the reality is we're not going to be able to stop the virus spreading through the classroom. The research shows that kids get it pretty mildly, but any adult who works in the school is going to get it, or at least they're just being put in a really dangerous position right now. To kind of reiterate the point that you've been making, and also a lot of commentators, is that this pandemic crisis is just showing the cracks in the system that were already there. You know, one being inequality. A lot of private schools have been closing, and you know, in my school, the better off parents have been keeping their kids at home. The most advantaged schools still have full classrooms. The other crack that we're really noticing is that the position of teachers in society is so apparent right now. There's just so much disrespect for our profession. We are being used as quarantine officers, as babysitters, and no decision maker has mentioned our actual role as educators. You know, there's this sense that we're being sacrificed for the economy and, you know, forgetting, of course, that teachers too are parents and grandparents and may also be part of that vulnerable population in other ways. You know, we're feeling pretty helpless right now because as long as schools stay open, the kids will come, so we have to come. I guess, in conclusion, we need to respect educators, we need to respect education, also overthrow capitalism, and, yeah, smash the state.
Hell yeah. Respect educators, overthrow capitalism, smash the state. That's your list of tasks for the week, listeners.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, potluck, for a number of reasons. One being that I strongly relate to the description of children.
Yeah.
Chewing pencils, picking your nose, and like
touching everything. Yeah.
Yeah, being way too overly affectionate. Yes, I am a big child, I just realized. But I think that's a really salient point as well about the way that teachers are expected to be so many things.
Yeah. I don't mean to get all Foucault here, but I think part of the issue is that the purpose of schools isn't actually to educate people. It's to, like, teach them to operate normally and to be normal people. Normal there in heavy square quotes. But, like,
yeah, and as our potlucker points out, that teacher's position as an educator is, like, not even brought up in a political context often. You know, it's about, as the potlucker puts it, sacrificing them to the economy, using them as, you know, people to keep children occupied and out of the home so that parents can work, kind of thing.
This issue about schools has been one of the major discussions this week because it seems like really obvious from a common sense point of view that schools are a hotbed of infection and probably should be closed. And like seems, yeah, as I say, like common sense true. And the issue there is that the medical experts, the chief medical officer, Brendan Murphy, and other people have all basically been saying, we don't really need to do it. And there's a lot of tension in the general population about, like, can we trust these officials, and how reliable are these, like, epidemiological theories that are being used to justify keeping the schools open? I feel, again, this is really not my area of expertise, so I don't want to be taken as suggesting public policy here, but the reasons that people are giving for why schools should stay open seem pretty thin to me on the whole. One of them, for example, is that if the children who would be at school are instead at home, they'll be forced, their parents will be forced to find carers, many of whom will be grandparents, who are then vulnerable to getting sick from the kids. But maybe if we'd shut the schools and the kids wouldn't have got sick before they spent time with the grandparents, or like maybe we could spend a whole lot of money on the government, like the government could spend money on childcare for people who would otherwise send them to grandparents, or
provide income support for parents to stay home. Like, there are many different ways that they could approach that without just being like, oh no, we're just
going to not do anything.
Yeah, and put a whole bunch of educators at much higher risk than is necessary in order to keep this happening.
Yeah. I have a friend who does Auslan interpreting for schools, and they said that, it's just awful. There's no health measures in practice. Like, they try and wash their hands a bit more, but there's no, like, hand sanitizer being supplied, and just, it's super dangerous. And this is a little kind of side story that isn't actually about schools or corona, but something that we mentioned a few weeks ago that I think is kind of relevant for context here. Do you want to tell us about...
Sure. Like, so we talked about a few weeks ago when the chief of ASIO, whose name I've forgotten. Go on, take a stab. It's probably Richard.
I want to say Brendan Murphy again, but that's the CMO.
You know, the ASIO guy. And he was talking about what are the greatest terrorist threats facing Australia at the moment. And the two biggest ones were Islamist terrorism and extreme right-wing terrorism, white supremacist terrorism. And Peter Dutton said his thing where he could, he said that he thought that Islamic terrorism was left wing, which is very stupid. But something that we missed, which was pointed out to me by my friend Jess, shout out Jess, thank you for pointing out.
Supporter of the show.
This thing, which I can't believe we missed. It's like great snack pod content that Liberal Senator Concetta Fierravanti Wells said that she held a press conference after the ASIO press conference, basically chastising the head of ASIO for using the term right wing in reference to terrorism because it would be offensive to Australians who identify as conservative, which is just such an amazing big brain take. So disingenuous and even sillier than Peter Dutton's comment about leftism, Islamic terrorism being left-wing
terrorism.
You can
use left-wing to describe anything from left-wing to right-wing.
Some ways it's the opposite of what Peter Dutton was saying, because Peter Dutton was saying words don't mean anything, and Fierravanti Wells is saying words mean things and I don't like it when they hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
But what this demonstrates is that the Liberals are very happy to completely disregard the evidence and opinions of experts in service of their own ideological agenda.
Even the experts that are literally the ones that they've appointed to roles specifically to advise them.
Seriously. And like,
there's
from a very conservative organization like ASIO.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. There's been some discussion. I don't really have a strong evidence about this, but that the chief medical officer was telling the government stuff they didn't want to hear, and so he's kind of been quietly told to not appear in public, and they've been using the deputy chief medical officer. So that is not like 100% confirmed, but so anyway, it makes you really wonder about the school staying open thing. Like, how much is that the actual advice that they're given? How much is that like a compromise based on their political goals that they've like negotiated with the chief medical officer, like, this is going to be okay? And how much is it them just completely disregarding their advice? So we don't really know.
And I think it's just, I guess, further evidence that just because the government is doing something doesn't mean that it is good for the population, which obviously a pretty...
As cynics, we already know, but
yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah. But it is something that's come up in conversation with people that I've talked to over the past couple of weeks about this, like, oh, well, if it was really that bad, then the government would have done a hell of a lot more to...
Just like climate change, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, unfortunately, not particularly sound logic, especially when it comes to a horrible government such as the one that we have now.
Yep.
I think it is now time for our... Blurst take.
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey.
And we actually have two blurst takes. We've got a blurst and blurster situation here. So the first blad one is from Matthew Lesh at Matthew Lesh on Twitter, who is an adjunct fellow at the Institute of Public Affairs and also the head of research at the Adam Smith Institute, which is hilarious.
What's the Adam Smith Institute?
So Adam Smith is like a libertarian economic theorist. He really wasn't as libertarian as the libertarians think. But he was the one who came up with the idea of the invisible hand of the market. But he was also like not exactly a free marketeer. And a lot of his work is like misunderstood by people like the IPA and the Adam Smith Institute. So
what did Matthew Lesh
Matthew
say?
Lesh said this. There is nothing wrong with retailers increasing prices. It ensures products can be bought by those who value them the most and helps prevent shortages.
Makes sense to me. Why would the hand of the free market do anything unfair?
Yeah, it's there's never been a bad result from people increasing prices. You know, insulin prices extremely high in the United States. It just means the people who care about
insulin the most are able to get it.
And the ones who don't really care that much, they just have diabetes. You know, they clearly don't care. So... Fuck you, Matthew Lesh. That's just the blurst fucking take.
And I wonder if anybody could top that.
Yeah. And in fact, we do have a topper from Simon Briany. Briany. You shouldn't look it up, so you don't need to know how.
Briany Simon.
Yeah. And listeners will be extremely excited to know that he has a job even more ethical than the IPA and Adam Smith Institute
did. If it were possible.
He works for Philip Morris. Anyway,
is he the like fucking head of comms or community engagement or something
like that? Is high up there? Yeah, public policy, I think. Yeah,
yeah, right. If you don't know Philip Morris, they own like
they're like the largest tobacco company
in the world.
Yeah. So, old mate says this. Not only is there nothing wrong with it, as a consumer, I want at Coles, at Woolworths, at IGA Australia, at Aldi Australia. To implement reasonable price changes to respond to demand so that when I need high demand items, they're available. Donate the proceeds to charity if you like.
There's a few layers to that, actually.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I won't be able to dissect them because I've just died.
well, RIP Noon, welcome back to Ozpol Zach Pod. Do you like that one?
Yeah, I did, actually. It works well.
It does. The sentiment of I just want poor people not to afford anything so that when I want it I can get it is really indicative of this other tweet that I saw who I can't remember who it was by, and when I saw it I thought it was kind of cheesy, but it's just being shown proven correct again and again, which is instead of people putting masks on, a lot of people are taking their masks off.
Ayo.
This is absolutely like, oh, you want me to explain capitalism to you in 240 characters?
Yeah.
It's that if you're poor, you shouldn't have anything, you fucking idiot!
Zach, it's actually called supply and demand.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. It's just rational decision making.
The other thing that kills me about this tweet is donate it to charity if you want. Like, is he suggesting that price gougers who are exploiting vulnerable people in times of crisis are then going to use that extra money?
Zach, they're not exploiting poor people in times of crisis. They're allocating prices to goods based on their demand so that only the wealthy can wipe their butts.
Oh, shit. Sorry. Well, see,
it's just good economics.
It's my fault for not having followed the Adam Smith Institute on Twitter for long enough.
That is your fault. Yeah.
Oh, man.
But
there's so many... this is so just nakedly ghoulish.
Yeah.
Like,
nakedly ghoulish. I like that as well. Maybe that's the new podcast name. Yeah. Well, there was just a little thing that we wanted to talk about news-wise that is sort of attached to these blurst takes, which is that the Australian Federal Police are going to be raiding toilet paper hoarders.
And Dutton also said that he was deploying Border Force to look into it as well, which
yeah.
I don't know exactly what the connection is there. I think he was just sort of...
That's who he's in charge of.
Well, I think maybe there's like a suggestion that, you know, there's been this thing going around of, quote, busloads of people trucking into regional areas and stripping the supermarkets bare. And I think there's maybe a suggestion that some of those people are like immigrants or something.
There's definitely been people being like, people are buying toilet paper and sending it to China. And like, there's... I mean, like, it was...
So, I just... Look, I haven't heard about this from... So, I don't know if this is happening anywhere else in the world, but I haven't seen any news stories from any other country about toilet paper being bought out en masse.
Oh, no, it is. The US. Okay. There's no toilet paper to be found in the whole of Colorado. No. It's an international situation. I think Australia kind of was a little ahead of the curve on it, but no. It is worldwide. And, like, largely that's because the economic... the industry in China has been shut down, and they supply most of the world's toilet paper. And, like, there's not going to be a global toilet paper shortage. There's only a like logistical issue about it getting it onto supermarket shelves at the moment, but it's not only in Australia. It's very funny.
Sending it to China
in a sad racist kind of way.
Very fucking funny to me.
The other thing about this is that the government, and I think this is actually a quote from Richard Miles, who is a Labor guy, who said that Australia is producing enough food to feed 75 million people. And that the shortages in supermarkets is a, as I said, logistical issue. It's about getting produce to the shelves and then people not buying all of it as soon as they possibly can. That actually Australia produces about 85% of the goods that you see on supermarket shelves. There is not a severe food or toilet paper shortage. It's only an availability crisis. So there's a bunch of stuff going on at the supermarket ends to try and make that more available. And I'm sure you're all aware of what your local supermarket is doing and so on. But like,
I know that in Victoria, they've lifted restrictions on like the times that trucking routes can be traveled and that kind of thing. Yeah. So, you know, there are certain things being done to try and speed it up. But yeah, I mean, essentially it's an issue of people who already have way too much of a thing going and buying more.
Totally,
of that thing.
Yeah. I'm in a bunch of prepper Facebook groups, and like the day that it started, there was some dude who posted a selfie with him with like literally like four trolleys full of toilet paper, being like, "Ha ha, suckers! I'm gonna sell it for literal gold when everything goes to shit."
As we discussed on our bug out episode, there are two kinds of prepper: one who's excited to murder everybody, and sit on a throne made out of toilet paper, I guess, and the other who just wants to grow plants and share their toilet paper.
Yeah, yeah.
Be cool. The good kind, people. Don't be the bad kind.
I think there's probably enough blad takes. Unfortunately, there's going to be a lot more of them coming up. So.
There is no shortage. And look, just in general, obviously we've talked about the fact that, you know, in a time of crisis, it's like the pre-existing weaknesses in a society or economic system or whatever are exposed. And obviously it's a time when people are trying to push their various agendas. And so seeing people get more politically active has been in some ways really inspiring, and watching people get kind of slightly radicalized or increasingly radicalized by looking around and being like, hey, the people in charge have no fucking idea what's going on. Is nice to see things like discussion of a rent strike, which is something that we might get into in a future episode. But also, obviously, everybody who has shit ideas are using
this. Is also doing the same thing.
Yeah, and we kind of got mini mobbed by Mark Latham supporters.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
The other day on Twitter, because I just happened to be one of the first left-wing people to comment on one of his tweets, and a whole bunch of people jumped into our mentions to just say their most heinous racist shit.
It was really incredible how fucked a lot of the things they said were.
Yeah. For sure. But, like, basically, racists will obviously use any excuse to express their racism, but it's like the first thing that comes to mind when they think about coronavirus is, oh, we need to lock down our borders. This is the thing that will finally allow us to lock down our borders and stop all immigration, make Australia for Australians again.
Yeah.
But it's this, like, I guess that's accelerationism to a certain extent, that basically, you know, people's beliefs are going to get slightly more extreme as the circumstances surrounding us get more extreme. I don't know. I don't really have a point here beyond it's been interesting to see that it's just a general raising of the political pitch.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
There's more shit being said and more extreme shit being said in, you know, in the kind of mainstream, which has been interesting, sometimes inspiring, sometimes disturbing. Speaking of which,
shall we move on to
Shitpost of the Week?
There were a couple of shitposts that we really liked this week that we felt like we couldn't give shitpost of the week because it would be a little bit like self-indulgent.
Yeah. But I think probably like 6 months ago, we had a new category, shitpost of the week of our heart.
And this week we have dual winners of shitpost of the week of our heart. First, we wanted to shout out Chris Ritchie, who does...
Friend, confidant,
member of Inner Sanctum, who makes a lot of Ozpol Snack Pod specific memes, basically about, I enjoy listening to Ozpol Snack Pod.
Which is great, because we enjoy you enjoying it, Chris. Thank you.
it's so nice to see just high quality OC about enjoying the show. It's really nice.
Yeah.
And he made one this week that is in his... style speciality, which is wrestling memes.
Yeah.
And it was a very cute video of two wrestlers walking towards what I presume is a third wrestler in what appears to be a menacing way, and then it ends in a big group hug. And the people are labeled Zach and Noon, and it's very cute.
Yeah.
So thank you, Chris, for your ongoing meme support of the show. We love it. Well, happy shitpost of the week of our hearts to you.
The other one we're going to award to Viv on Facebook, who I don't know if we should use his real name. But
Look, we have shit-talked him on the show before using his real name, so I feel like if we're going to say something nice...
We should also use it. So Lewis, thank you very much for this meme, but it was actually a reply, so I'm going to have to explain the first post, which was from Coot Cootle, who, again, has featured on the show once or twice, sent in some potlucks and some other things, who posted a screenshot of a conversation that me and her had on Facebook Messenger about 2 years ago, when we were talking about GDP, and this was in the middle of a big conversation where she was like, I don't fucking get GDP. What's up with that? And I was trying to explain that to her with various amounts of success. And she was like, okay, so what if we got a disease and gave everyone a disease? Wouldn't that be good for like reducing GDP? And I was like, probably. And she was like, yeah, but then vulnerable people will die.
It's a bit eugenics-y.
The phrase.
It's the quote.
Yeah. Which it is. Yeah. We decided not to go ahead with that plan. So, yeah. But then...
The world did it anyway.
Yeah. And do you want to take us through Lou's then?
No.
Okay. So... In response to this, Lou made this beautifully photoshopped meme. It was really next level. Zach was just like going on to me for like 5-10 minutes before we started recording about how crisp this edit was.
One of those form and function memes that's just like, it's a deep cut Simpsons reference to begin with.
Mm.
It's excellently photoshopped with Coot's meme inside the secondary meme. It's got the Frinkiac font, which, as we all know, is necessary for a good Simpsons meme.
Mm.
It's just really, really well put together. And, like, it's a bit of a deep cut, and it's about two friends of ours. So we're like, we can't give this shit post of the week, but we're still going to talk about it for 5 minutes on the show.
Okay, and so this is how the meme goes. It's Kent Brockman reading the news, and behind him... is, as Zach said, photoshopped into like the picture-in-picture news frame is the text, the messages that me and Coot had, and Kent Brockman saying, treason season has started early with Coot advocating eugenics. And then it cuts to Lisa watching this on TV, and she says, I knew that shitpost would come back to haunt her. Yeah. It's very good. It's very good, Lou. Thank you.
Fantastic, memeing.
And... please do some more. You're clearly great at memes.
Bring
them on.
Yeah, talent for memes. And thank you, Coot, for the
thank you for the
vaunted Coot content.
Yes,
which we always love.
And we are enjoying GDP collapsing. So yeah, we're probably going to talk about that a little bit on our bonus episode. So
that's right. Checkmate, aliens.
Cool. So that was our shitpost of the weeks of the huts. Zach, do you want to take us through our actual shitpost of the week?
Yeah, so this week's shitpost of the week goes to Holly Edward, who is someone that I have never met before. And she posted this amazing Rugrats meme.
Yeah.
By the way, in general, more Rugrats memes, please.
I'm going to watch some Rugrats when I get home, I think. That was a really good show. It's great content.
You should watch the Hanukkah episode.
Oh, yeah. It's nicely animated as well. Klaxi Kupso, however you say that. But like,
no idea.
No one does. Okay, it's Hungarian. Yeah, no one knows how to pronounce that. Go on, tell us about the memes, Zach.
I will. So I might be getting this wrong, but I think that Tommy's mom is called Dee Dee. And she's looking through the letterbox of a door. And on the other side is someone standing with a bag of groceries. I think it might be Chucky's dad, but I'm not sure because I can't tell from behind. And Dee Dee is labeled wealthy people with savings and steady incomes blasting people on social media for not just staying home. The person with the groceries is labeled casual workers threatened with the choice between potential eviction or exposing themselves to COVID-19. And Dee Dee is saying, just leave the bags and go away.
It's true. Yeah. And yeah. That actually got a lot of play. We posted that on our social media. So thanks, Holly, for bringing in those likes. Got shared by... high-profile shitposter Taz Johnson in some of his groups.
I mean, there's a number of things that are great about this meme, aside from the Rugrats
it
format.
Being Rugrats,
Is that it expresses a relatively complicated idea. Mm. Like, it's kind of cumbersome to explain.
Text-heavy,
Like, orally. It probably doesn't come off super smooth on the podcast, but
that's
the
major flaw with our whole podcast format.
Yeah, it's been
to talk
baked
about
in
memes.
Since the beginning. Yeah.
We hope, apparently you guys enjoy listening to us attempt to do it.
Yeah,
so.
Like, we never made a podcast before. What do you want from us? But it's actually a very neat and concise description of, like, a relatively nuanced and complicated idea. Because, of course, it's important that people self-isolate as much as possible.
Yeah.
But there's a huge amount of privilege inherent
being
in the idea
to do that.
Of being able to work from home in the first place. And obviously people who are in super casualized work already, such as gig economy workers and delivery drivers for Uber and Uber Eats and Deliveroo and what have you, in a very vulnerable position at the moment, both in terms of contracting the virus, but also being in a super precarious employment position. I think that meme does a lot with little. Great work, Holly.
I think that leads on nicely to a conversation we wanted to have about New Start and some of the kind of economic side of this. There's a few different angles. And I think there was an announcement from the government last week that there's going to be money going out to people on pensions. There's going to be a lump sum paid out. And although it's not a huge amount, it's going to be helpful and so on. But there's been a new announcement that New Start is going to be fully renamed Job Seeker Payment. So that is going to include, I think there are 6 different categories that had different names that are now all going to be included under Job Seeker, possibly including study for some reason that's not entirely clear to me, but whatever.
This is something that's been coming down the pipeline for a while.
This isn't a COVID-related
thing. No, it's not related to the crisis specifically. And it is something that has been railed against by welfare advocates.
I'm just bringing it up now because if you're reading about Job Seeker or New Start, or we say Job Seeker or New Start, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And the government has been saying, yes, there's going to be a lot of people losing their jobs now. Everyone should go and apply for Job Seeker allowance, and that's the way that you're going to get supported for that. There's not going to be any sort of like specific COVID-related category. However, the people who apply to New Start because they've lost their jobs as a result of coronavirus-related shutdown are going to be paid a higher rate than people who were job seekers already.
Well, because those people were lazy bums who are unemployed they didn't try hard enough.
Yeah.
But if you're unemployed as a result of COVID-19, obviously you are a worthy human being, and so you get more money. I mean, that's just how the system works.
It just makes perfect sense, both economically, ethically. It's just,
it's real fucked, you guys.
It's so bad,
I think this is also another, like, mask off moment in the sense of very similar to what we were talking about last week in terms of the government giving these lump payments to welfare recipients and thereby implicitly acknowledging that the best way to reinvigorate the economy if you are trying to do stimulus, which we're going to talk about later, is to give that money to people who are actually going to spend it as opposed to businesses or people who don't need the fucking money.
Totally.
And in this case, they're acknowledging that New Start is not enough to fucking live on.
Absolutely, yeah.
But they won't raise the rate because they are incapable of acting against their own ideology. And it is just so frustrating to watch their actions completely contradict the things that they claim to be true about the world. I'm sorry, I'm getting heated again.
No, I love
it. Keep
going.
Do
it.
Yeah, yeah. I think when I yell, I say less, which is good. I think that's probably more pleasant to listen to. But so this is the first of 4 fucked things that is going on with regards to welfare payments and the COVID-19 crisis. So there's the fact that new job seekers are so gross.
New job seeker recipients.
Yeah. New job seeker recipients are going to be getting a higher payment. We couldn't find the actual numbers on that.
Stay tuned.
Let us know. The other thing, one of the other things that has happened is that it's become clear that people who are on the Indu cashless welfare card are going to have their stimulus lump sum of $750 quarantined on that card. They're not going to be able to spend it how they want.
I know it is the correct word, but using this quarantined there is a little confusing. Just to be clear, that $750 will be spent only spendable with this cashless welfare card.
Which we already know is a terrible system that takes away people's dignity and autonomy.
And also has shit outcomes, like people buy less fresh fruit and veg because they can't go to like a market and buy it there. So they have to go to Woolies and then they get it on canned or whatever. You know. Anyway, yeah.
The other thing is that Centrelink is not stopping robo-debt recovery,
yep.
Which is fucked. They could absolutely do it because if they wanted to. I mean, they should stop doing it anyway because it... A, it's illegal, and B, it's just obviously...
cruel and inhumane.
Super unethical. And they have the ability to stop doing it, which we know, because they stopped doing it during the bushfire crisis.
Yep.
So they've just chosen not to. That's obviously fucked. The other thing that is going on is that the government is refusing to cancel mutual obligations for people on JobSeeker.
Mutual obligations is another fucked term that... people who have been on Centrelink will know what it means, but for those who haven't or it's been a while, that means you're like obliged to apply for 20 jobs a month and that you have to go to weekly or fortnightly meetings to like prove that you have nothing going on in your life or something. I don't know what
they're
for.
Have discussions about your job seeking attempts, basically.
Go to really demeaning like training sessions where they like explain that you should have your name at the top of a resume and shit like that.
It's so fucking patronizing. Yeah, yeah. And like all of these providers, almost all of them are just these fucking like scams.
They feel like
shell companies.
Yeah,
like you go in there, yeah. And I remember going in and just being like, people being like, look, there's not really anyone around to see you. We'll just like tick it off. They like, there's absolutely no, not that they should be more rigorously making people do shit. It's just that the whole fucking thing is obviously a joke and is for profit, yep, by these companies, yep, not about actually helping people find work or whatever. So anyway, the government is refusing to cancel those obligations that job seekers have to, you know, prove that they're looking for a certain amount of jobs and stuff. They have relaxed the obligations slightly. I think they reduced the amount of jobs that you need to prove that you've applied for from 20 to 4.
Which is a pretty significant reduction, admittedly, but like also...
why not just fucking cancel it?
Yeah, it's not like there's a lot of jobs available at the moment. Like,
which again, the government is acknowledging, but also won't go this... like they won't go far enough to make it look like they're actually giving poor people anything that's going to, yeah, make their existence easier in the longer term. And I think they've also basically said that you can apply to do your obligations over the phone or online, yep, instead of in person. So yeah, it's just like, why these fucking bullshit half measures? Because they're being prevented by their firm belief that these people deserve to be put through this shit.
Also, there's been some reports that job service providers, those independent agencies that fail to give people jobs, have already been relaxing these requirements independently before the government and Centrelink have said that that's what should happen. And this is just one more example of the government being about 4 days behind the whole population of Australia. And we mentioned earlier there's this new regulation about indoor gatherings, 100 people and like 4 square meters or whatever. But my local cafe had already taken out like most of their seating and tables before that had happened. And like people were like, libraries had already shut down. All of this shit had already happened. And the government is just like slowly catching up with the sensible decisions that normal everyday people are making. And I suspect that the same is going to be true of schools. There's private schools have already shut down because they're not like under obligation to do what the government says in the same way that public schools are. And I don't know. I just think that we're going to continue seeing this for the rest of the time that the crisis unfolds, that everyday people are going to be making sensible decisions about health and welfare and community safety, and then the government's going to come in later and like implement it officially but badly.
Yeah. The system works.
I also just wanted to say about that floor space thing, I should have said it when we brought it up at the start, but this is a way for the government to close down the hospitality industry without saying that directly. That's what it's for. It's like, obviously other stuff is going to be captured by it, but yeah, they want pubs, clubs and bars and cafes and restaurants to shut, but they don't want to have to say that they're telling them to do that. So they've had to do it in this really indirect way.
Well, yeah, closing hospital would be bad for GDP.
That's right.
We love the economy.
Yep.
We're just
going to
do something else severely that's completely injured. Unrelated.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And Noon, the last thing you wanted to say about this was a little comment you had about stimulus and the way that it works with supply side and demand side economics.
Yeah, I don't really want to get into a whole lot of the detail about it, but basically this is a health emergency, not an economic emergency. And although there is obviously disastrous economic situation happening as a result, this is primarily a health problem. And the government hasn't seemed to realize that because they haven't been doing all the shit that you do in a health emergency, or only very reluctantly, as we've been discussing. But there's basically no point in trying to stimulate the economy right now. We are on the like downward slope of an economic crash. And although I do think it's really important to be doing stuff like giving money to welfare recipients and other sorts of things, making sure that people are able to look after themselves and buy supplies and so on.
In other words, looking after people because they deserve to be looked after, not because it's going to be good for some abstract fucking concept.
Totally. Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. Because then in 3 or 4 months or 6 months or 2 years or however long it takes for us to get the medical situation under control, we're going to need to restart the economy. And at that time, stimulus will be useful and effective and impactful, right? That's the time to start spending money on the stock exchange or on boosting business revenue or whatever. But right now, there's nothing that we can do to stop the economy collapsing except ignoring the health crisis. And what we should be doing and what all the economists are saying...
Ignoring the health crisis?
Yeah, like, I mean, we could just be like, yeah, fuck it, go out, go do everything that you want, have shows, whatever, don't worry about the health crisis, let's just keep the economy going, right? But that's obviously
irresponsible. Which might work in the short term.
Well, yeah, until everyone dies, yeah. But, like, what economists are saying, we need to deal with the health crisis first and then the economy afterwards. And, like, not only afterwards in the sense of it being a secondary consideration, but literally in time afterwards, because doing it before the medical situation has been resolved is not only pointless and expensive, but like will make it harder to then do it in the future.
It's just very backwards and tied up with what we've been discussing, which is that, you know, capitalist governments view their job as being to keep the economy going, and that their primary responsibility is to this abstract concept of the economy as opposed to the well-being of the people within it. And so you kind of lose sight of the fact that, like, no, the economy is made up of people contributing to it. And if they are sick and can't fucking work, then obviously that's going to be bad for your economy fucking love so much. It's just very kind of immature, simplistic thinking, I feel. So kind
Scotty
of short-sighted. They're doing a bad job. But we're going to go out now on our last segment, which is going to be...
Positivity Corner. Oh, I'm already feeling relaxed.
Yeah.
And positive.
So this was a suggestion from my partner to talk about this, and this is a really great group called the Melbourne Period Project, which is a project run by the National Homeless Collective. There's also a Sydney Period Project, a Brisbane Period Project, and the Victorian arm has wings in Geelong and Gippsland as well. So what the Period Project does is they make up period packs for homeless people. So those will include, you know, obviously sanitary products, but often a whole bunch of other stuff as well, like painkillers, hand sanitizer, wet wipes. Any kind of thing that could make going through your period slightly less horrible when you're homeless, because obviously that's, you know, it's going to be really hard to get the resources that you need. You know, like, imagine asking somebody for sanitary products, like, on the street. Like, that's just an extremely rough situation to be in. And one thing I really like about these people is that they are definitely not, like, gender essentialist or, like, they don't just talk about women.
They go really out of their way to be inclusive.
They're very inclusive of trans men and non-binary people and gender non-conforming people.
Yep.
So that's something that I really like about them as well. So they're a really great organization, and they have been basically working overtime during the COVID crisis to get period packs to people who need them, because this is obviously a time, as we've discussed, when the most vulnerable people in our society are at even higher risk than they normally are.
And of course, homeless people, like, even more so because of being exposed to the public, not being able to, like, people aren't walking around giving cash, they can't self-isolate, their, like, income streams are gone, all of this other stuff's happening, and, like, shelters are obviously, like, potential contagion hotspots.
so many ways in which this is making worse life even harder than it already is for
already in the bottom. Yeah,
yeah. So really upsetting. But Melbourne Period Project, as have many other homeless organizations, have been working over time, and basically they ran out of stock. So these period packs are made up of donated items. So they're not always the same. I think you know, you might, it depends on what people are giving. So they put out a post on Facebook, basically being like, "Look, we've run out of stuff. We really, really need more shit because there is a desperate need for it right now. If we're going to do a 3-day drive for products, if you can help out, please do." They set up drop. They've how it works is they set up drop off points around the state, which I think is mostly just individuals who are like, "Yep, drop
stuff
at
my
place
house or whatever." Yeah,
yeah. And very quickly after they posted that, they just received a massive influx of donations of sanitary stuff and also all kinds of other things that are really helpful to put in these packs, including like shampoo and conditioner, body wash,
nappies, and also like food muesli bars and
cereal. Yeah, they suggest like Up and Go and muesli, and as you said, muesli bars and that kind of thing.
Fruit
so
cups.
Yeah, they received an absolutely overwhelming response and were able to make up heaps of new packs, which is really awesome. They are a great organization to donate to if you're looking for somewhere to send excess things that you have. You can check out, I think, yeah, just search for Melbourne Period Project on Facebook, or if you're from other states, obviously, try your local version.
And yeah, the peak body there is the National Homeless Collective. So if you're having any trouble getting in touch, then look for them.
Yeah, and if you want to donate to them financially instead of with goods, they're running a GoFundMe at the moment, the National Homeless Collective, that is, which is called the COVID-19 Homelessness Crisis Support. And that's a really great place to help out if you're looking for some way to contribute at the moment. So, definitely go and check those people out. It's nice to see that, you know, this is a great example of people coming together in the community, providing support for the most vulnerable among our number, which is really heartening to see at a time when, as we discussed previously, people are using this as an excuse to be even more rabidly neoliberal and heartless. That not everybody's response is to become super self-obsessed and worried about their own situation, that there are a lot of people whose response is the opposite, to become compassionate and act in a selfless and helpful manner. So that's really lovely to see. Melbourne Period Project are great. National Homeless Collective are great. Help them out if you can. That'll do it for the news this week. Usually at this point, we would read out any new reviews that we've gotten on usually Apple Podcasts or any other, sometimes other platforms. But we haven't gotten a new review in ages. If you were a new listener,
or an old listener who hasn't left us one yet, there's definitely a lot of you out there listening who haven't left us reviews. So that's fine, but you know, you could just do it. You're stuck at home now. You're on a computer trying not to do work. Just give us a review.
Yeah, it's not that hard. But we did get a really lovely comment from one of our first patrons, if not our very,
possibly
very
first,
first
one, yeah.
patron, who is called Mr. Orson B. Cool.
Yeah.
And he left a really lovely comment on our last episode, just saying that he appreciates what we do. It was in response to me saying something what's the term I'm looking for?
Deprecating?
Here? Self-deprecating. Thank you. Doing great.
We've been talking for a full hour now.
We have been talking for an hour. I actually don't have that many words in my head. That's why every second word is, but he left a really lovely comment, and thank you for leaving that, Mr. Awesome. Be cool.
Thanks.
We really appreciate that.
I just wanted to give myself a shout out. I got an article published the other week, and I've been meaning to mention it on the last couple of episodes, but it's about meme economics and radical architecture. Check it out.
Where can people find it?
It's on the New Economy Journal website, but I'll post a link on the show notes. It's also in the Facebook group. So if you've been listening to the show and aren't a member of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, just hop on Facebook.com/groups/Auspol Shitposting.
You can also follow Auspol Snack Pod on Facebook. We have a separate page.
Also on Twitter, also on Instagram.
Yeah, we're on Instagram now. We posted our first ever story today.
Yeah.
And we had a listener, I'm not sure what their name is, but they were like, "Oh, wow, had no idea what you looked like."
Which one is whom?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
which was funny to realize, because, you know,
we know what we look like. It's true. It was funny at the start when everyone was like, "You guys sound exactly the same." And we were like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah. Very distinct miscellaneous
Very
white voices.
Very distinct miscellaneous white voices. Yeah. I was trying to do a thing there. Didn't really... All right, we're done here.
Oh yeah, and also share us with friends and family.
Yeah, please do.
we've had a little bit of a downward tick in listens.
Presumably commuting is down with coronavirus.
Yeah, that's my current working theory. I think if you're like isolating at home and you live with other people, then probably you're not going to just sit there and listen to podcasts in your room.
But you should.
I know that when I listen to podcasts, it's like I'm always doing something else, washing dishes or going to work or whatever. So, you know, sharing us could be great for us. And also, please support us on Patreon if you're not doing that and you want to... We would appreciate it.
Yeah.
We really need to end the episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Hope everybody is staying safe as much as they can and keep on snacking in the free world while you do.
Crunch, crunch.